This is 16.9, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. We're all about digital signage and have been since 2006. We cover what's interesting now and what will be interesting and important one day soon. And we filter out all the BS. This podcast is a chance to add depth and color to what we do online, and it gives smart people a chance to really talk about their companies and their ideas. You can hear new episodes weekly on your smartphone, tablet, or desktop, free of charge. 16.9 is sponsored and supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful, ready-made, auto-delivered, and auto-updated content for screens. By far the busiest post on the 16.9 blog is one that lists the many options out there for free, kind of sort of free, or free to start with digital signage CMS software. One of the oldest, and among the few that are legitimately free, is Zeebo, an open source digital signage solution that started as a student project in the UK many years ago. It's still around and has grown up and dramatically evolved. Zeebo is still open source and still fundamentally free, but a company has developed around it to provide supporting services, things like hosting and technical help. The open source Zeebo code in its early days was definitely stuff only propeller heads could make any sense of and use, but Zeebo now has friendly installers and easy user interfaces, making it a product anyone can work with. I spoke by Skype with Dan Garner, the student who first developed Zeebo in Brighton, England back in 2004. He now runs the supporting company, Spring Signage. Dan, thank you for joining me. Best thing to start this off would be to tell me what Zeebo is all about and where it came from.
Yeah, sure. So Zeebo is obviously digital signage software with a web-based content management system and player applications which run on Windows, Android, and on WebOS. The CMS and the Windows player are released as open source software. So the entirety of the CMS and the Windows player, which is full featured in the sense that it supports everything that the CMS can do, they're released under the AGPL V3, which is an open source license. So essentially what that means is that as we make releases of the software, we make them freely available for download, including the source code that people can look at, modify if they wish, review, whatever they want. Mm-hmm. On top of that, we have some commercial services which are entirely optional, which help us support the project. Those are the player for Android, the WebOS player. We also do some hosting services for the content management system and offer enterprise support on top of that if required. So one of the things that we really try and put emphasis on is that the core of the solution remains open source and free. So we've tried to make it very easy to install and get running, and we've tried to make it so that the Windows player, which is the open source player, is fully compatible with everything the CMS can do. So that's our core set of features and goals, really. The project started in 2004 as a final year university project here in the UK. And then there was a little gap in development before we released the CMS and the first Windows player in 2009 under that same open source license. The commercial activity started around 2011 as we found the project was becoming quite popular. People were asking us lots of questions, wanting new features added, you know, additional support for things. So we started offering some commercial bits around the solution, and we've gone on from there, really.
So it kind of sounds like you had a student project. You did it. You put it out there, and you went off and did something else and sort of found your way back to it. Did you ever imagine as you were putting this thing together as a student that this would be, you know, your gig, your company?
Yeah, well, it's almost a bit of a surprise every day, to be honest. When I left university, I didn't. I went to work for a company, a software company that did something else, totally different. But in the background, you know, Zeebo was still around and people were still looking at it. My business partner at the moment, Alex, he worked in a local school at the time, and they had taken the open source version of the software and were using it. So there was always a little draw back to it as he was using it and we were fixing things with it, etc. But certainly it's been quite a journey from then until now.
I bet.
Yeah. It's quite amazing, really.
If I'm an end user and I go on to 69 and find the post about free digital signage CMS platforms out there, they're going to find Zeebo. And they're going to see open source. And if they know anything about computing and software, they may go, oh, that sounds intimidating. That means I need to be a coder to work with this stuff. And you're saying that's not the case.
It certainly used to be the case.
Okay.
The open source software tends to have a bit of a barrier to entry. That's certainly not true of every piece of open source software, but a lot of them make assumptions about how knowledgeable you are. Mm-hmm. And we used to do the same thing. We're absolutely guilty of that in the early days. But we've certainly recently put a lot of effort into our documentation for getting Zeebo up and running. We've moved over to something called Docker, which essentially lets you do almost a one or two step installation of the CMS, the CMS is quite complicated software. You know, you need a web server and a database, but Docker wraps that all up into one or two statements that you execute and then you're done. So it's not as daunting now as it was, I think is what I'd say to that.
And the reason that your related company is Spring Signage, and that's the company that's providing all the services, right?
That's right, yeah.
And the driver there is kind of twofold. One, it gives a commercial aspect to the company instead of just giving stuff away. But I would imagine it enables you to kind of stay on top of the software and make it easier for users to adopt Zeebo, because, you know, they can click and use you guys for hosting and hosting it on a server that's optimized for your software, I assume, is a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the commercial activity we do feeds pretty much directly back into the project as a whole. So we directly do all of the development for the project, but the vast majority of the development, I should say. And we also offer a lot of community support. So we have a community area it's got about 4,000 users at the moment. About 10,000 posts a year as of this year. So a lot of our time is spent sort of trying to improve the way people interact with it and make it easier to use. But certainly what we have found is that a lot of people they like it, it's open source, great. They run it on their own computer and they think, I want to just roll with this. And that's really where our cloud hosting comes into play. So we take away the headache of having that server that you've got to manage. We take care of all the backups for you, all of the upgrading and patching and all of that stuff that can be quite a headache managing that environment. We do all that for you with the cloud hosting. And the same is true actually with people who want to run it on premise. You know, they have the ability with the architecture, you know, server architecture, and they want to run it on premise, but they still want our support. And that's where our enterprise support comes into play, which people are finding quite useful as well.
There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of CMS options out there. It's insane. Why would people choose Zeebo as opposed to those many other options? Is it purely a commercial decision that this will cost me less?
I think Zeebo has a draw to it because it's a well-established, long-running project, and you can see, spending a few minutes on the site or in the community, you can see that it's a well-supported, active community behind it. whereas some of the free options that you look at are a little more closed perhaps than that. When compared with commercial alternatives, I think the draw for a lot of our customers is the idea that they could do it completely themselves if they wanted to. And yet, if they get into trouble, we are there to help them. So you've got appeals from both ends in that respect.
Is the user base, maybe describe the user base. I have this sense that you've got a lot of companies that companies and organizations that just really don't have the budget for a commercial option. And as you were saying earlier, then you've got companies and let's say academic institutions and so on that have IS departments who've said, you know what, we want to host this on-premise and we want to manage it and we want to be on top of it. And, you know, we're smart enough to do this on our own.
Mm. Yeah, we have a real range of markets, size of customer and their goals, actually, which makes it very interesting to keep on top of it. The CMS collects some anonymous statistics, so we have a rough idea of the sort of types of installations that are out there. Although, of course, it's only a minimum guess because some people will disable that or some installations will be behind firewalls and things like that. But the largest CMS we have at the moment is 2,200 displays connected, wow, which would be the single screen, not including video walls or anything like that. The average size across all of them that we have statistics for is 8 displays.
Okay.
So it's a real range of different types of installations, which keeps us on our toes. But it's really nice to see that the software has been, it's sort of developed into something that can support both ends of the scale. And generally people find it useful to do that with.
Yeah, well, certainly a lot of entry-level products out there, the criticism that comes up, particularly against companies that are selling a commercial product, is those ones are fine, but you can't do much with them, and they certainly can't scale.
Mm, yeah.
You're out to 2,000-plus nodes in one network, so yep. you've figured that part out.
Yeah. We've there were a few changes that had to be made to support those larger instances, obviously, but we're there. We've done it.
And where is that one, the big one?
That is in Australia, that one.
Oh, wow.
But there's some others that are close to that size in various other parts. And there's some that we know are that big, but we don't know where they are because the statistics are entirely anonymous. So
right. And do they tend to be academic or are they corporate or just, again, all over the place?
It is all over the place. I would say that we do deal a lot with the education system and we do a lot in manufacturing, but we also have lots of coffee shops and, you know, really a very broad range of different activities.
Are you, if you decide, okay, I'm going to use Zeebo or I'm at least going to try it out, are there concessions and compromises that you are making because it is open source, or would this compare quite favorably with CMS software that you're paying real money for?
Yeah, so open source software doesn't really have any major drawbacks in terms of what you can do with it, unless you're trying to modify it in some way. So the license we're released under, it states that if you make any modifications to the software, they also have to be open source. So a lot of times we get people coming to us saying, hey, I'd really like to use this as a basis for my own offering. Can I just do X, Y, and Z to it? And the answer is yes, absolutely. But that must also be open source. And I think that is a mindset that some commercial entities are not quite ready to embrace yet. But broadly speaking, we haven't had any feedback that says, I wish you weren't open source because then we could definitely use you.
It takes time and real money to make and host this podcast, so I'm grateful for the continuing support of ScreenFeed.
Hi, this is Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Hope you're enjoying the podcast as much as I am. I've loved Dave's blog since we started in the industry. It's now our 10th year at ScreenFeed, and we've grown to be a reliable partner for the industry, serving over 1,700 customers with over 100,000 screens globally, and we're currently getting 10 million content requests daily. But more important than that is that we make content beautiful, functional for the medium, and we help our customers meet their goals of increasing viewership and satisfying customers. If you don't know how ScreenFeed can help you, it's worth 5 minutes to browse our website or give us a call. If you're out walking your dog, driving home, or relaxing on your favorite chair, just make a mental note to check us out. Now back to the podcast.
Right. Are there any enhanced or elevated security risks because the code base is out there?
There's very much two schools of thought on that. One school says people can see your code, so they can get in and possibly exploit that. And the other school of thought says, well, actually, it's peer-reviewed by thousands more people than a closed-source application would be. And therefore, the security issues are that you're much less likely to have them. I know Zeebo has been reviewed by some security bodies as part of best practice before it was installed in certain locations. And, you know, we have fixed security issues as a result of that. But those, again, they may not have been found in an alternative application without having access to that source code.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I know about another company that has a background in open source, RiseVision, which is my neck of the woods, is they also had a very, very active user community. And I believe that's still the case. And what was intriguing to me was a lot of the support that happened for other users came from their peers. In other words, somebody would put up a comment on a forum saying, I'm trying to figure out how to do this. And before the Rise guys could even get to it, there were other users saying, well, do this, do that. Are you finding the same thing?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really fantastic, actually. Our community is very engaged in what we're doing and how the software works. And it's really nice to see. And it helps us out. We're quite a small team, and having that many posts coming through does create quite a support overhead on that. But the community is really good.
The services that you provide, if you had to account for percentage of your user base that uses those services, do you have any sense of that? Or is it like half of them who buy commercial services from you, or a quarter?
There's a certain ambiguity in any of these statistics, because a lot of what we collect is anonymous, and people may or may not have said they use it. We've certainly found cases where we've engaged with customers before who have then subsequently discovered that other parts of their business are already using the software and neither of us knew. But broadly speaking, the Android player is very popular, and roughly half of the players out there are Android players. CMS instances, it's much harder to say. It's a much lower number than that, maybe around 20%.
And for the Android player, you pay some sort of a fee for that, right?
That's right. There's a $21 license fee, which is a perpetual license for that player on a device for the major version of the software, and will release bug fixes, which will get included in that license charge. But if there's a major new feature that comes out, that will attract a small upgrade fee.
So this is $21 one time forever?
One time forever, yep.
So if you equate that to a software as a service fee over 36 months, it's less than $1 a month.
Yep.
And have you found, I've written quite a bit about Android through the years and had a real mixed set of opinions. There are companies who went hard with Android and then backed off because they said we couldn't stay on top of all the different versions, and it was just too difficult, and the players that were out there were too suspect in a lot of cases. Whereas some other companies, commercial companies like Navori and others have said, we love Android, we're all in with it, and it for us it works. What's been your experience?
It's been a little mix of both, actually. So the biggest pain points of Android for us are the variable hardware that you can get. So we have a list of recommended Android devices, of which there are two current ones on there at the moment.
One of the thousands you could use.
Yeah, exactly. And one of those is a company that we've worked very closely with in order to get custom firmware on what is essentially a custom-built device.
And which one is that? Because people will automatically wonder.
It's a company called DS Devices. They only make a box for Zeebo. They don't.
Oh, okay.
And that journey of finding and testing hardware, it's almost taken longer than actually getting the application working in a software sense. So yes, it's certainly not straightforward. But testing as many devices as we have has allowed us to offer stable choices.
And because you have an Android client, could that run on a system on chip display, like a Sharp display or a Philips display that's running Android?
We haven't had the opportunity to test it. I would expect that there would have to be some minor modifications made to it. But in principle, certainly, it wouldn't be too much effort to do it, I would expect. But we've not had enough interest in those particular system on chip options to spend too much time on it.
Yeah, I would imagine because of the way you guys are set up, you're dealing with a lot of end user clients who don't really move in digital signage circles, if such a thing exists. That, you know, they're not following the industry. They're not even aware of system on chip displays.
Yeah, that's very true. And it's only very recently, maybe the last year or so, where we have had the odd customer here and there, you know, maybe 1 or 2% say, do you guys do a system on chip player? Which is why we've gone to the trouble of making a WebOS option. Mm-hmm. But that really is a smaller percentage of our market right now than the other bits, certainly.
Do you see that growing? I would imagine so, if you've, as you say, made the effort.
Well, what seems to be the case is that the larger projects, which are maybe more corporate in nature, are much keener on having an all-in-one style solution, mm-hmm. which is why we've gone to the effort of making that. And we're hoping that as the Zeebo brand gets, you know, more popular, maybe more, even more refined, we'll attract those sort of opportunities much more.
And when it comes to the larger display manufacturers like an LG or particularly a Samsung, you can't even really buy a Samsung commercial display that doesn't ship with SoC.
Absolutely, yeah.
So are you going to work on like a Tizen version?
We're looking at it. There's the latest version of Tizen, is SSSP 5, I think it is. Mm-hmm. The panels will start shipping with that beginning of 2018, I believe. So we're looking at doing something for that, but it's very early stages yet.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned how you want to elevate the Zeebo brand. That's a conscious decision that you're at a point with the company where you can go beyond being an open source project that's kind of just supporting your user base into something that's a real commercial force.
Well, I think in some respects it comes back to what you said before about people hearing the word open source and thinking, oh, that sounds a little bit too difficult for me to get into. Mm-hmm. If you'd gone to our website 6 months ago, you would have looked at it and thought, it probably is too difficult. But what we're trying to do is make ourselves more presentable and make it, although it still is open source and always will be open source as far as we're concerned, we want it to present itself in such a way that isn't an issue for people anymore.
Mm-hmm. Other companies that have, let's say, affordable options out in the marketplace, they've often and I'm thinking of companies like Rise Vision that they started a store years ago, let's say 4 or 5 years ago, maybe even longer, where they had different application widgets, functionality widgets and things like that you could pay for. And that's how they were going to make their money. Have you gone down that path at all, or have you kind of seen what services actually attract a buyer versus ones you think might?
The software is technically capable of having widgets. And in the past, we have developed widgets specifically for certain customers. But the licensing we've chosen consciously means that those widgets also have to be open source. Whereas I believe the store for somebody like Rise Vision, I think they can charge for those widgets. Mm-hmm. So we wouldn't be able to do that without relicensing, and that's not something we're thinking of doing. We get all of our commercial activity really through the idea that the open source version is full featured. There's nothing that sits behind a paywall. You don't have to pay for extra functionality. Mm-hmm. And that's where we're going to continue down that route.
So it's a bit like I'm a WordPress user for my blog and have been for a dozen years. And in the WordPress universe, there are lots of companies that provide WordPress services, whereas the CMS itself is free, but there's WordPress hosting, there's WordPress themes and everything else. It sounds very much like you're kind of in that sort of model.
Yeah, and there are already a number of companies that we know of that do provide services around the solution, which is great. You know, having somebody who will design you a layout or will make you a piece of custom code that fits into your scenario is exactly where we'd like to go. Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I've observed over the last few years is how different systems are converging, and how WordPress is a good example. There are a number of companies now that I'm thinking particularly of one in the UK that's kind of a spin-off of a German company, where they're taking a WordPress slider and they've turned that into a WordPress kind of presentation tool. And you have lots of web capabilities that can schedule and push stuff to a screen. Google, for instance, is working with Coca-Cola, and they're using DoubleClick as their scheduling engine for Coca-Cola's presence in grocery stores in the U.S. Do you see these worlds converging?
I think they certainly have been. I'm not sure whether a solution like the one you just spoke of is obviously doing something for them that is working, but I'm not sure if those sort of solutions could bridge the gap with a fully purposefully designed digital signage CMS. Maybe there'll be lots of crossover from lots of different applications, but I think there will always be a place for a purposely designed solution.
Right. What do you see coming up over the next 12 to 18 months, maybe longer window or more open window than that, in terms of technologies that you would be applying? When I talk to companies, they certainly talk about HTML5 and data.
Right. Yeah. Data as in big data.
The use of data to shape and trigger content, I think, more than anything else.
Right. Yeah. I think what we're seeing a lot of activity around from our users is the idea of triggering content from third-party systems. So being able to design something whereby a user buys something through a POS system, and that then shows complementary products on the signage next to it. Mm-hmm. Or somebody pick something up, touches something there, and that changes the screen over the other side of the store to show them something of interest. We're certainly seeing a lot of that, and we're making sort of moves in that direction with our next release, which will probably be out the middle of next year, which is going to contain a lot of interactive signage, so touch, and also event-driven signage. So being able to feed events into the players and get them to do interesting things based on that data. In terms of data directly, we have a concept called data sets in the software already, which we use to sync with third-party data sources and then present that data in ways that are interesting to the end user. We certainly want to expand on that, the idea of, you know, remotely syncing that and applying some, you know, some presentation around that to make it useful.
Okay. If people are interested in Zeebo as an option for them, where do they find you?
So our website is zeebo.org.uk. Everything you need is linked from there. Download, manual, everything that you'd need to get started.
And last question, where does that name come from?
Well, it was back in 2004, so quite a long time ago. It's a play on some Latin. There's a Latin word, exhibo, which is spelt with an E, which means to display in Latin.
Okay.
And it was just a play on that, which seemed like a good idea back in the university days.
Except you have to spell it for everybody.
Except you have to spell it out to everyone and tell them how it's pronounced.
All right, Dan, I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net, every day. If you like this podcast, please also check out the companion 16.9 podcast called Projects. That's done by Michael Tutton, and there's a new episode every second Friday. 16.9 the blog and now the podcast are properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.